until you go through roll after roll after roll after roll, until there are no, the face ceases to be form because you finished with each of the rolls that was taking form. Because you begin to see, since the person's face is changing before your very eyes, that your desires, your model, is your thought form is creating, is taking that matter and putting it into form. You know how when your moods change, the entire world changes. You create it differently. And finally you see behind all that, and you just see the eyes of the other person, just the eyes, and here we are, just eyes, just here. And we see that you and I are involved in infinite variety of roles all the time. And those are the vehicles through which we speak. But we speak only to ourselves. We speak only to ourselves. Now, at that moment, then the act of lovemaking, what does it mean and how does it work then? Then it becomes a physiological dance of two parts of form, experienced by a single consciousness. And then it becomes like mudra. Mudras are statements made with form, like this is a mudra of prayer. That's a mudra. That's a mudra. That's a mudra. That's a mudra. Your body is always making a statement. It's always making a statement. Each of you at this moment, your body is making a statement. Most of these statements, most of us are unconscious of most of the time. We just think we're keeping our body around, keeping it comfortable. But in fact, it's making statements. And when you start to bring all of your being into consciousness at every level, your body statement becomes part of the whole process. And it's completely consciously done, the way you move. And you watch a conscious being move and you notice there's no effort that isn't, it's as if every movement is an act of the highest art and the highest beauty. Because each statement is absolutely perfectly conscious. And each one is the optimum place to be at that moment. So you get a feeling when you watch a conscious being move that you are watching something like a tree sway. You're watching a harmonious act, an act that's harmonious. And then you begin to see that that body movement, just like a work of art or a piece of music or anything else, in its purest sense, in the fourth chakra sense or above, is merely a statement of truth. It's a statement of God. In other words, you're doing it in its sacred rather than its profane form. You're doing it as a statement of truth. And that means that's what's called a consecrated act. Consecrated act. And so then lovemaking becomes a consecrated act. Because there is one consciousness which is higher than each of you separately that is performing this act with your two body, with the two bodies, which is an act, a statement of truth. Statement of truth. And then it's just not making love, but it's eating, and it's toileting, and it's walking, and it's driving, and it's meeting everybody you ever meet. When you meet somebody on the street, is that somebody you're meeting on the street somebody different than you're making love to? And if so, why? What model is it in your head? Does it scare you to think that you'd walk down the street and you would look at everybody as your lover? Is that too much? Can you handle that one? So it's scary to you because you think of it in second chakra terms. Because you think, well, if it's my lover, that must mean I want to go to bed with him. That's in your model of lust of subject-object. But the lover in the sense of, here we are, wow, here we are, here we are, here we are again, wow, dig that. Here we are. Because if what I said is true, about that when you live in the fourth chakra, you are as high as you're going to be when you're at the moment of orgasm. Now think of walking down and getting on the Third Avenue bus in the moment of orgasm. And think of meeting the grocery store man in the moment of orgasm. And think of meeting the policeman in the moment of orgasm. And think of eating your breakfast in the middle of orgasm. And think of going to the toilet in the middle of orgasm. It's hard, isn't it? And the minute of that merging, unitive, all coming together, oneness of... Right? And all I'm doing is walking down the street. That's the meaning of the term yoga. That's the ananda of sat-chit ananda. It's the absolute bliss, it's called. taking your own life just the way it is at this moment, how do you transform that? How do you transform it? How do you bring consciousness into it, into every nook and cranny of it? Now, in our Western doing way, we first usually think we ought to change our life. If you got a job, give it up. If you're at school, drop out. If you're not married, marry. If you're whatever it is, go to an ashram. Do something. Stop eating. Start eating. Eat this. Eat that. Do this. Do that. But as you've done all that after a while, so you rush and do it sometimes, and then you see that you bring with you all the stuff that you're trying to get rid of into each new external environment. Although each external environment may call forth different parts of where you are at. So that if you go up into the mountains and live alone, it will not arouse in you certain kinds of worldly desires that would be aroused were you sitting in the middle of New York City. But then you find when you come back to New York City, you have to face a lot of those anyway. All you did was push them out of sight. You didn't finish with them. So finally you get mature enough and wise enough to start with right where you are now. If you're a man with a job and a professional responsibility and a commitment, here I am. If you're a woman with children, here I am. If you're somebody who is working in service, here I am. If you're somebody who is drifting, here I am. If you're somebody that's an artist, here I am. If you're somebody that's... Start with where you are. And you start to bring to bear consciousness on every part of that life just the way it is now. With the understanding that as you bring consciousness to bear on every part of your life, that part of your life will change to come more into harmony with the Tao, more into harmony with the universe, with form, with all manifestation of form, without your doing anything. It's like I didn't have to stop seeing my old friends. It all just fell away. And it fell away because I wasn't the person I used to be. And there wasn't any reason for us to be together. And there was a feeling, there wasn't any ripping, there was just a dropping away. And the mature being realizes that growth is very much like the snake shedding its skin. The skin falls away, you don't rip it off. You don't have to say, goodbye, parents, I'm leaving, rip, rip, I gotta rip. That's only because you don't have enough faith. That you gotta make some external waves in order to prove to yourself you're doing something. But actually, the process goes on just very gently within the field you're in right at the moment. Like you can work with the thought that any time you can say about anything in the universe, quote, that brings me down, the next line you should say is, well, that's my problem. Meaning that's a place in my head that I'm stuck in. That's why it brings me down. In the yoga, one of the methods is called contentment. That's not a goal, that's a method. Most people say, sure, well, when I'm finished, I'll be content. No, that isn't the game. The game is contentment, meaning it is just the way it is, just the way it is. This is the way it is, okay? Now, I can be content at this moment, and at the same moment, the next moment, I will move towards something else. Like, I can be sitting here, and I'm here, and this is content. But in this body situation is the seeds of the fact that I'm going to do this. Because there is some tension in my body, because it's not in harmony, because certain muscles are being strained, and so on. So I can sit here, and at the same moment there is that tension, and the next moment that tension is going to motivate me to do this. Still, when I am here, I am content. 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 Okay? Can you hear what I'm saying about that? So that even though you're going to change something the next minute, that doesn't mean you change it out of discontent. It changes because it changes. It changes because it changes. Now, it is under that basis that you do everything you do in yoga. You do it because you do it. But at each moment, you are exactly where we are, which is content. And as you begin to calm down and hear and see more and understand more, you begin to feel the way in which your body and the way in which your breath affect your state of consciousness. And you begin to notice that very often your body brings you down. It's like if I wish to do a formal meditation and put my body in a certain position, like into a lotus position, and sit down and get myself perfectly balanced so that the weight is forward on my body, so it's sort of on the thighs and on the front of the rib cage, and I just sit down like this, I can at that point, my body can fit into the harmony of the universe in such a way through balance and so on that I don't have to think about my body anymore. My body won't keep demanding consciousness saying, knee hurts, back's getting sore, leg going to sleep, sending all these messages which are saying, do something about me. And as you start to do that first exercise we did this morning, which is just bringing your mind to one-pointedness, and you see why your mind can't get to one-pointedness, you begin to feel that your body is sort of catching you somehow or other. And that the model of coming into some other harmony means getting something done with your body. And you begin to work on your body, on your diet, on your body movements, on your breath. Just because. You start to notice that when you eat certain foods, you feel certain ways. It's an old art. If you want to be in the second chakra, you eat aphrodisiacal foods. There are certain kinds of foods that are called rajasic foods in this Hindu system, meaning fiery foods like spices and meat and so on that are into more like first, second, and third chakra stuff. You eat first, second, and third chakra foods, you'll be first, second, and third chakra person. Because in some way you are what you eat until you get to the level of consciousness where you can transmute. The minute you can transmute energy, you can take anything into your system and move it immediately up into the place it's got to be, to a higher center. But until you can do that, where it comes, what you take in, has a ascending thing in it. It'll support some particular model or another. We're going to do an exercise during the noon meal of conscious eating. And then we'll be discussing food more in the afternoon. But now I'd like us to do something with pranayama or breath. Now everybody moved out of some place or other into something or other with some thought or other. Right? All you have to do is note that. I don't, you know, it's noted. Pranayama, which is the fourth of the eight limbs of the yoga, we've been working with number two and number one primarily thus far. Fourth limb of the yoga is called pranayama, which means control of prana or life force. And it's concerned with learning how to move prana or energy up your spine, get it up into the higher centers. When you really are doing pranayama, when I am into pranayama, in the formal sense, pranayama will take me into every state that I ever got into with LSD. Pranayama is the most powerful method that I use in terms of straight power. Although there were power mantras I use, which are just about as powerful, but this is extraordinarily powerful. What I'm going to share with you are the three basic breathing techniques to get the process going. You use them for 5-6 months until you get certain clues inside you. The effects of these breathing things are that your breath will become very, very calm all day long, very gentle and calm. And if you're going to be able to develop a center so you can see how it is, you have to stay right here, calm. And you begin to see how your environment, your breath is your environment. That's one kind of an environment. And a perfectly, if you study a yogi, his breath is always so thin. He can be, my teacher can be running up a hill and you listen to his breath, and I get up to the top of the hill, and his breath is absolutely... Now, besides calming the breath, these exercises in pranayama will simultaneously give you a feeling of lightness all day long. The third thing they will do, and this is very interesting, because I thought of these as very trivial things until I started to see how they work. That pranayama is so powerful it starts to affect your diet very strongly. It starts to affect what you can eat when you're really doing pranayama. You got to really get into it, but that's the way it works. It also affects your blood. And it will start to sensitize you to certain nerves in your body. Here's how it works. Now, you may have learned breathing exercises in different ways. That's groovy. Do your own. These are not his versus mine. These are merely a set. There are many paths, and this is one traditional path of breathing. Breath is one of the ways to tune in on prana, that's all. Breath and prana are not necessarily the same. Prana is all energy. Breath is merely one of the corners of it. These three exercises, which are called Shitli Bastrika and Nari Sodhan, are to be done on an empty stomach, and they are to be done with, meaning, no food for 3 hours and no liquid for an hour. When you are doing a total sadhana, that means you are doing nothing else but your sadhana, but your spiritual work, and everything in your life is designed around that, then you are able to organize your life so that you could do the breathing 4 times a day at 6, 12, 6, and 12. If you're living in a cave, for example. Most people in the West, at the degree of intensity at which they do their sadhana, can perhaps do it twice a day, and the minimum, of course, is once a day. And perhaps the best time to do it is early in the morning. And if it's to be 2 times a day, it's early in the morning and the evening before you take your evening food, if you're going to take evening food. The head, neck, and chest are kept in a straight line. Now, these three breathing exercises are taught in two ways. One, they're taught in a very gentle way, and one, they're taught in a much more powerful way, which I started to teach this more powerful way, and then somebody came up to me and said, "You're not supposed to teach that to people. That's dangerous." So I immediately wrote to my teacher and I said, "I'm not supposed to teach that. That's dangerous." And he wrote back and he says, "It's all right. So I'll teach it to you just the way I know it, because I have a feeling that the danger lies in the way in which it's invested, and I don't feel any danger in any of these. And I'll explain the one I do, which is the one beyond these, and what the dangers are connected with it. Since anything I know, you're welcome to know." Now, the secret or the power method of these is the closing of the mulbund. The mulbund is an opening, or it's a set of nerves you activate, which tightens a set of muscles. And these muscles, you can experience them. They are 2 fingers width behind the genitals and 2 fingers width in front of the anus. There's a place, which is right down in here, where a series of nerves, it's like a nerve center. And when you pull back and in and up on that, it's like pulling back in on the genitals. And when you go to the toilet, when you defecate, you tighten your sphincter afterwards, and it's that same feeling of tightening the sphincter and pulling back in on the genitals. Now, most people have learned through psychoanalysis of one form or another to let all that open. See, otherwise it's known in the culture as being tight-assed or some image like that. And now you're going to learn to close it and keep it closed. Right? And you will keep it closed during the entire 3 breathing exercises. Later on, you learn how to keep it closed all the time. So just it automatically stays closed. You just open it when you need to open it. You don't keep it open and close it when you need to close it. Now, at first, when you try to close it, you'll feel a vrrr and a tight, and you can't do it, and you forget, and that's all part of the course. It's all cool. Don't get uptight. It's sometimes helpful to take a little ball of cloth, like a kind of a bigger golf ball made of cloth. Don't use a rock or anything like that. A piece of cloth, and stick it under there so that it presses up on those and it helps those stay closed. Helps remind you, too, to keep them closed. And you can carry your little yoga kit, which includes your earplugs and your little ball of cloth and stuff like that, and your tube for washing out your nose. And then if you get more advanced, you have your long piece of cloth that you swallow and you bring out your rectum and you clean your intestines. Depends on how deep you want to get into the whole program. You know, this is the first round of methodology, so we won't do any rectal cleaning today. So you try to keep the mulbun closed, and I'll try to remind you about it. And it doesn't matter where you're starting from. It doesn't matter anything about your age. It doesn't matter anything about your previous anything. It's just whether or not you're ready to do these kinds of things. I started yoga when I was 35, I guess, and I was, like, I couldn't have sat in this position for more than 10 seconds without excruciating pain, right? And the, oh, God, you know that place? And now I just put my body there and leave it there. And that all happened within, like, 3 months. Of 3 months of just doing it. Just cut out all the, can I do it? Will I do it? Just do it, see? It's just simple as that. Just do it. But get comfortable. Don't, just get so that your head, neck, and chest are in a straight line. You can sit in a chair. Doesn't matter. Whichever way you can do your thing most comfortably, so you can get your body cool. The mulbun close. Now, this particular kind of breath control is all preparatory, and therefore it's all, in this case, it's all upper breathing. It is not lower breathing. You're not breathing down here. It's up in the chest, diaphragm. So there is another bund or opening called the Uddiyan bund, which is right here. Now, in different kinds of things, you do different kinds of breathing. And they are, it's not good and evil, it's just different kinds of breathing for different purposes. This particular type of breathing is upper breathing. You close the Uddiyan bund as well. That's where you suck in on your gut just a little bit. Now you can notice that when you let out your air completely, you can suck way in the gut, and when you strengthen those muscles, your stomach starts to go in rather than out or straight. It goes way in under your chest cavity. But at the moment, you just pull it in just a little bit. So you've closed the mulbund and the Uddiyan bund. And then this first one called Sheetli, you extend your tongue and make it into a U. Now, many people say, I can't do that. Statistics sometimes say that 70% of the population can do it and 30% can't do it. It's been a study of who can make their tongue into a U, see? However, most of the people that say they can. They just never have learned how to do it. So all you got to do is stand in front of a mirror and do all the things with your tongue you think you could do until it turns into a U, because there's a place that it turns into a U, but you don't know it, because you've never looked at it. So you get there and you get as close to it as you possible. You extend your tongue quite far, create the U, then breathe the air. You breathe, this is a good thing to do facing the sun or facing the sun in your mind, and you breathe light force in through your tongue, and then you close your mouth and let it out your nose. And the breath is not forced and it's not shallow. It's deep, but not forced deep. Now, one more thing. While you're doing that, you keep your attention focused right here on your ajna. Okay? So that you bring in all this energy and you bring it as fast as you can right to this point. And when you're doing this properly, after you've done even five of them, you will feel a huge burning sensation right up here. You'll feel tremendous heat, and you will start to experience light in your forehead. Just from this breathing exercise, after you learn how to do it. Now, you do five of them the first time you do it. Then every time you do it, you add one more till you get up to 50. So we'll do five now, then next time you do it, you do six, then seven, then so on up to 50. Then you do 50 each time, right? Close mulbund, close Uddiyan bund, head, neck, and chest in a straight line, in through the mouth, out through the nose, bringing all of the energy right to the place between your eyes. Do five of them. That is called Sheetli. The second of these is called Bastrika. It is also known as the bellows. You will again close your Udiyan Bund, keep as a little bit, keep your Mool Bund closed, the lower Bund closed. Bund means gate. The breathing again is upper chest, upper breathing. You will take short staccato breaths in through your nose, breathing in and out, hitting the in point and the out point as if with a trip hammer. It's as if tick, tut, 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 tut. The game is to keep the in breath and the out breath of equal duration and equal intensity. And go as fast as you can comfortably go, keeping those of equal duration and equal intensity. The body, during this entire exercise, is to be kept relaxed. The focus is on the inside of the tip of the nose. That is, right inside where you, when you breathe, you'll feel air hit the nostrils right here. And when the air hits these nostrils, that's the place right there you focus on. And just put your attention there. You do this for 30 seconds, and you just estimate 30 seconds. Just feel your way through a clock for 30 seconds or however long 30 seconds. And then at the end of that time, rest for a few moments and then do another 30 seconds. Evenly, calmly, but in and out trip hammer, like. Do it just at the rate you can do it. Or brrr. But fiercely. Don't be too gentle. Fiercely. Head, neck, and chest, straight line. Mool Bund closed. That one was called Bastrika. The third one is called Nari Sodhan. Nari Sodhan is ultimately the most powerful of these three, although it appears to be the least often at the beginning anyway. In this initial way of doing it, you take your third finger, place it on your forehead of your right hand, and then using your thumb on your right nostril and your fourth finger on your left nostril, you now control your two nostrils. Your third finger is right on your ajna. Now you will take air in through the left nostril. Then you will hold it and you will let it out at the right nostril. Then you will take air in the right nostril, hold it, let it out the left nostril. That is, you will change over nostrils before exhalation, not before inhalation. So it's, now, during the time you're doing this, watch this whole process, you will visualize, and this is where one-pointedness becomes very important. When you're taking in through your left nostril, you will visualize energy going in your nose and down the left-hand side of your spine to the bottom of your spine. Visualize a long U. And then what happens from where you're sitting, the left side, you start down the U, breathing in the left nostril, then across when you're holding, then let it up and out the right, then in and down the right, across, up and out the left. In and down the left, across, up and out the right, in and down the right, across, up and out the left. Now, what you're doing by doing this is sensitizing yourself to two nerves called the Ida and Pingala, or two sensory pathways. And you will start, at first you'll just fantasy that you're doing this. Later on you'll start to actually experience those places. You'll start to get, I'll tell you, when I go let my breath out, I feel a vrrr. It's just like somebody runs their finger up your spine at first, and then it gets even more powerful later on. Now, the key important place is during the hold that you keep your consciousness right at the bottom of your spine. That's the key one. So that you start in, you take in on a count of four, hold on a count of two, let out on a count of eight, hold two. In four, hold two, out eight, hold two. In four, hold two, out eight, hold two. Then I'll tell you what the next exercise is, even though you only do these three for a while. Right? Now, a count of four means it's roughly 4 seconds. The Vedas talk about the way of measuring it as you go around your knee and snap your fingers is one way of doing it. You can do it. You could do it 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2, 3, 4, 3, 2, 3, 4, 4, 2, 3, 4. You can do it. It's about the same thing. It's roughly counts of. Right? So it's in, 2, 3, 4, hold, 2, out, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, hold, 2, in, 2, right? It's like Arthur Murray. Mulbun closed, head, neck, and chest in straight line. Third finger on the forehead, take in on the left, let out on the right, in on the right, let out on the left. Consciousness goes down the spine, across, and up. Do five of them, five rounds. these three then, in the first one, you'll do 5, then 6, then 7, up to 50. And you do 50 a day. In the second one, you do 2 units of 30 seconds each. Later, after a few weeks, you can make it 4 units of 30 seconds each. The third one, you start with 5 rounds, and then you increase that one up to 50 rounds. That's the slowest one. The whole thing will take you about 20 minutes when you're doing the full round. It's a way of calming your mind. It's a way of centering. It's a way of getting your body lightened. It's a way of calming your breath. It's a way of changing your blood, which will ultimately start to affect your diet. Don't underestimate its power. Very, very, very useful technique. After you have been doing this for a while, sufficiently long so that you are feeling those nerves in your spine, and so that you can keep your mind one-pointed, then you move to the next one, which is where you retain the breath for longer periods of time. For this one, it is good to have somebody around who is doing it and who has done it before and knows about it and can guide you a little bit if you have any problems, or be able to ask somebody if you run into any problems. You should be able to have somebody, a checker, when you're doing the more advanced breathing. It's called Anulom Bulom. And in Anulom Bulom, I'll just tell you what it is so you can know anyway, even though I don't think you want to undertake it unless you have fulfilled these things I've been telling you about. You would close the Mulbund and Udiyanbund, and then you will take in the air on 4. Then you close the Julundabund, which is by putting the chin against the neck, like this. So you close this, this, and that. And then you hold the breath for a count. Say you might do 4, 16, 8, 2. And then you'll get to 6, 32, 10, 2. And then up to 64, and then 128, and so on. Now, the secret of that one, that's the powerful one, in the sense that that's the one that'll take you into samadhi. Just force you right into samadhi, if you can do it. But the if is big, and the if requires that you can make your mind totally one-pointed. And the way the game works is, you're holding your breath, and you've got this closed and this closed, and you're holding it, and you start to feel that pressure, and if you feel like you're holding your breath, that means your attention isn't where it's supposed to be, which is at the bottom of your spine. And now the game is, can you keep your attention at the bottom of the spine at the same time as you're holding your breath without attending to holding your breath? That's what the whole secret is. It's easy to keep your mind one-pointed when there's no pressure. Question is, can you keep your mind one-pointed when there is pressure? It's like fasting. Can you keep your mind one-pointed when you're hungry? And in the same way, the way it's written up in the Vedic books, for example, in something like Serpent Power or something like that, you visualize at the bottom of your spine a triangle, an inverted triangle of yellow fire, in which is a lingam, around which is wound 3.5 times a serpent with its head down. And you visualize this triangle of fire right in from the bottom of your spine and up from those 3 nerves, right in a place down in there. Same time keeping everything closed, and you're holding your breath, and then you go down and you become that yellow triangle of fire and become that serpent. That's all. You just become the serpent. And then just keep holding your breath. And there is a point where you're holding your breath, and when you experience you're holding your breath, you're in the wrong place. You forgot what you were supposed to be doing, which is keeping your consciousness at the bottom of your spine. And the high moment which is very powerful, is when you suddenly remember that and you put your consciousness back on the bottom of your spine, and then suddenly you are not holding your breath and you're not breathing. And usually at that point you say, I'm not breathing, and that brings you down. See? In other words, you just did that thing. You took yourself out of the place. So the process is that it only works when you can make your mind totally one-pointed. That's the only time it works. It doesn't work otherwise. You can play it, but it won't work. It is now 20 minutes of 1, and I think I was supposed to stop at 12 or something. I'm sorry, I've ruined the schedule. We meet again at 2:30. And now, when you're eating, I would suggest if you... later we'll do a silence exercise, but I think this time, I think we can take our meal in silence. I think that wouldn't hurt us too badly. Most of what we talk about is interpersonal stuff. It's just stuff. And it's interesting to sometimes set aside that stuff a little bit. And if you're going to eat, eat consciously. And that means when you're picking up a piece of food, pick up the piece of food. And when you're chewing it, chew it. And when you're savoring it, savoring it. When you're swallowing it, swallowing it. You find out the minute you start to eat consciously that way, you eat just as much as you need. Because that unconscious eating where you keep eating and eating and eating, and I'll have some more of that, and all the time you say, and don't you think that's terribly interesting, and I'm certainly going to try that, and I certainly want to become conscious, and all the time you're pouring food into your mouth as if, well, after all, I got to stoke the furnaces for the afternoon. That's all illusion, by the way. It's all nonsense. It's all nonsense. So you might as well start out by starting to try to eat consciously. And in the Southern Buddhist method, you can just go through just observing the process of eating, observing the picking up of the food, and then the putting it in the mouth, and the chewing it, and the savoring it, and the swallowing it, and then the eyeing the next bite, and then the moving in, and then the organizing the food on this fork, and the picking up, and the putting it in the mouth, and chewing it, and savoring it, and enjoying it, and swallowing it, and digesting it, and all the pressures in your body. You can just... That's plenty for your consciousness.